This is CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning. This is Sex Talk with John T. Searle and Tamar and some really cool guys in the studio.
This is
really awesome. Brucey is here.
Hello, everyone.
And Louis de Barros from Mumba Online.
Hello there.
You've got to talk closer to the microphone like you're really going to smoochie it.
Okay, got it. Get up close and intimate.
There we go. That's so much better. This is really awesome. The story of Mumba Online, which is one of the longest running gay media platforms in the country. I met you a long time ago.
Yes, you
in
did.
In the days of the Baroness, and we're going to talk about that. So this is Unradio, this is Unscripted, this is Uncensored, and we would really love to hear your questions and your comments about all sorts of things. So WhatsApp us on 0797482090. And we're going to do something fun first and see if anybody is smart this morning. We need to put that on and then we can do this.
Ninja sex. Chocolate starfish. Twitter bang. Calipa GM.
Today's dirty dictionary word is...
Looning.
Looning.
Dirty dictionary word.
Looning. I couldn't resist this one when I saw it.
So...
Any ideas, Louis?
Looning. Well, immediately mooning jumps to mind, but I'm sure that's not that.
You are so far out of the ballpark.
Oh, no, that takes away mine.
I was going to go in a similar territory, but looning is when you like is when you really look at someone when they're mooning. Yeah. So you're supposed to look away when someone moons you, but if you happen to get a thrill and decide to look,
that's,
you
know, your
that's looning.
Nowhere near.
Or that you're a loony.
Nowhere near.
Oh, shame. Either. Okay. Nowhere so we're not smart. Either. That's great. We can be just hot. That's fine.
Absolutely.
Here we go.
So towards the end of the show, and I remember that last week I forgot to tell you the dead dictionary word at the end of the show.
I kind of liked
which
it.
Which was rhabdophilia, which is getting aroused from being flogged or caned.
Okay. Rhabdo.
Yes.
Good to know these
so
words.
So just if I remind me at the end of the show, please, in case I forget, and I will tell you what looning is.
And the safe word.
If you think you know what looning is, please WhatsApp us, 0797482090. And just before we started the show, I got some really cool news. Where are you going to be on the 30th of May?
Wherever you're going to tell me, most likely.
First retreat in Mozambique starting
really?
On the 30th
okay.
of May.
Done deal.
So at Tartarugan, all the information and stuff will be
I'm writing
soon.
It now.
And literally just a little while ago, I got the dates from Courtney,
yay!
Which is so exciting.
It is exciting.
To be up in Moz swimming with the dolphins. Mm. Mm. So that's really, really
it's
cool.
It's a good season in Mozambique as well. Mm. Not too hot.
It's great.
It's great.
It's fantastic. So that's our first retreat for the year.
Okay. That's important to know. Mm. Okay.
So, we should all be there.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Can I tell you where not to be?
Tell me where not
to be. In the 50 Shades of Grey new movie in cinemas. Don't do that to yourselves. I don't think you ever thought... We saw it together, the first one,
well,
John T.
I saw half of it.
Me too.
And then
we
I
walked
had enough.
Out.
Yes, and then I was enough.
So the third one, such a waste of time.
Wow.
It's a waste.
Bad movie...
Not even, I don't call it a movie. I call it a commercial to Audi.
Yeah.
And some nipples.
Right. Oh.
And some, how do you call that, obliques?
Cum gutters.
Yes.
What's the name of the actor that we all want to shag?
Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, so he's shaggable and she's very shaggable.
No full frontal nudity on his part?
No, nothing.
So unfair. Yeah.
And he shags with the most boring way and it's just nothing.
That's horrible because he is such a good actor. And you know, 2 weeks before we saw the first 50 Shades, I saw him in this amazing miniseries where he plays a serial killer.
Oh.
And it was a British movie. He's British. Or Irish or whatever. Irish, yeah. Anyway, it was fantastic. It was so dark. It was so fucking evil. And then he goes and does that shit.
Listen, like, this shit is nice as a commercial.
And
but this one
from
is
his
like,
point of view, I'm sure he's made whack loads of money from it. Anyway,
I can't even lie. It's like it's. I thought even to make a porn like video in my head from it and just to think of it and fun. There's nothing.
Mm. Yeah.
There's nothing. They're dealing with a pregnancy.
Oh.
They're being attempted Suburbia. To be murdered. Ugh, no. Oh. It's like, it's a cliche. In a cliche, don't see it. So that's it. We summed it
okay.
up.
Okay.
Don't go there. Missing go to one. The Mozambique retreat. That's it.
Sounds like a plan.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, my mind line.
Yes.
It starts with all.
A long time ago, I hadn't been doing what I do for very long, working in the field of sexuality. And I get this phone call one day or an email or however it happened. About the Baroness. And I think, what is this? Looks interesting. And that was where we first met, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Was the Baroness.
Yeah.
So the Baroness was a cross-dresser. Edwin. Yes, that's what I remember.
Yes. Oh, well, I mean, he'd probably describe himself as a drag artist.
Okay.
And his persona was the Baroness. And we produced my company at the time that I was involved with, a production company. We produced that show and it was wildly successful.
It was great.
Fabulous.
I really enjoyed it. Mm. And the interview we did was fantastic.
I remember.
So, yeah, it was really cool. And that was where I first, which was a long time ago.
Yeah. And speaking of full frontal nudity, as far as I'm aware, that was the first South African show to ever include full frontal male nudity on South African TV.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think it's the first time I've ever seen it on South African television because I saw all
the
episodes.
That was kind of landmark.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely broke boundaries and barriers with that show, yeah.
It's on Showmax now, hey. You can watch it on Showmax.
I'm not actually sure, really.
I think so.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because I watched it recently. So
I would love to go back and watch that. I think that's fantastic.
I'm almost sure it's on Showmax.
Is it the South African Rocky Picture Show kind of?
Do you know what I think is quite sad? It's been a long time since there has actually been a South African sex show on TV. You know, I don't know what you'd call it, a reality series, you know, that really is looking at aspects of sexuality in South Africa. I've got an awesome idea for a show. So anybody listening is interested,
okay. Give me a call.
Yeah.
Give me a call. I think it could be. But it's been a long time since we've done something about what's happening in South Africa sexually.
Definitely.
In aspects. It's, I think, something that's really missing. Where did Mamba come from?
So Mamba, I mean, it's been going for over 15 years now. It came from, you know, just personally as a gay man and back in the day and seeing that local gay LGBT media was really kind of very weak in South Africa and there wasn't much out there. And I felt there was a need personally and I thought there was a need also for the community and people out there to kind of find a platform where we could express ourselves, where we could find out what's going on in the community, where we could talk about issues, you know, pretty critically that affect us. And so, you know, I started as a sort of side project and and it's grown and blossomed since then.
That's fantastic. What kind of response did you get when you first came out with the platform? Because it always took quite a strong stance on things.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we tried to do is really be, as I said, critical, have critical thinking about stuff and question things. And I think that was kind of very lacking at the time. So I think that was quite new for the gay media here in South Africa, yeah.
Okay. And the impact on you personally of launching that?
Well, you know, I kind of describe myself now as a professional gay.
Love that.
Because my life is often so intertwined with what's going on in the community and dealing with these issues that it's sort of really become my life, which is kind of weird. But that's me, the professional gay. Yeah.
Okay. And how's it grown? What's it gone through?
Well, I mean, you know, the audio, we've grown very naturally. You know, there's not a lot of money in this really in terms of the gay community. We don't get a lot of support from advertisers
interesting.
We have this great constitution, we have, you know, but the reality is that we actually a very conservative country and advertisers are very conservative, brands are very conservative, and they don't necessarily want to associate with something that's, you know, very visibly gay or LGBT. So it's been a process of word of mouth, a process of, so we haven't had budgets to do lots of marketing and advertising. So it's taken a long time. It's grown organically. And you know, we're reaching over 80,000 unique visitors a month now, which is pretty good for a South African niche site.
That's fantastic. But that's really interesting because, you know, you keep on hearing about the pink rand and the pink dollar and all of this, which is an enormous group of people spending money around the world.
And it's a, you know, you see brands that are advertising to the pink market internationally. They won't do that here. There's a reticence to do that. There's a fear of offending the mainstream consumers. I'm not quite sure what it is. There's a lot of ignorance, I think.
It's ridiculous.
It's going to fall.
And so it's very frustrating. And, you know, every time I have to deal with a potential advertiser, it's not just a process of saying this is our website and this is what we do, but it's also a process of educating them about why they should be, you know, targeting our community, how they should be reaching out to us. And what are the issues involved? So, yeah.
I mean, and the irony is, just to back up what Louis is saying here, is that it's such an aspirational market. You know, we're talking about people who, for the most part, not to generalize, but generally in the past, it was two people with a double income, no children, you know, and there's a lot of aspirational lifestyle qualities that are associated with people from the LGBT community. So, it's a market that everyone knows that if you want a suburb to start looking better and improving, let the gays move in and start gentrifying the community.
Yeah, because everything gets upgraded.
And then all of a sudden, the market just goes through the roof. And it's the same thing in terms of the pink rand in general. And I think the sooner the South African market realizes how powerful and influential the pink rand is and the pink market is, the sooner things will be better for everyone across the board.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think we're also, you know, as a community, we can also be very loyal consumers, because when we see a brand or a company that speaks to us and says, we recognize you, we want to engage with you, it makes us want to, you know, be part of that brand, to consume that product, to buy that product, to be part of that that experience. And that's something that advertisers in South Africa haven't quite realized.
I've seen Diesel's going in some directions, and Nike even, to do kind of going to specific communities and talking to, let's call it, the difference. Okay, they do campaigns, and that made me even love them more. Well, after China, okay, let's kind of like, okay, child labor, but no, they speak about gay, I love them now. So you understand the point. But the issue is that companies are starting to diverse and allowing themselves to be more and more open to different communities and minorities, etc. But this is not a justification. This is really, like, companies should take a lead and take and really make a statement. What is this? What is this discrimination? It actually freaks me out that I think of big brands, they don't want to have their commercial associated or their brand associated with gay people or, you know, with the community. That freaks me out still. I can't believe it.
What's interesting is that there are organizations who've woken up, and there's companies like Globeflight and Avis, for example.
Yeah.
And they have noticed the huge benefit in supporting LGBT events and LGBT businesses. And so they're basically, you know, shooting fish in a barrel in terms of the market that they're getting and the business that they're getting. Because I know, as a gay man, I'm much more likely to rent a car from Avis than anyone else, because I know how prevalent Avis is when it comes to the different festivals in and around South Africa and the money that they put behind these things.
You know, what's fascinating then is how deep that prejudice actually goes to allow people to, or for people to allow it to affect them from a business point of view.
Yeah.
That it's so far beyond, you know, a personal prejudice or a personal issue with being gay that so many people have. And we were talking a little bit about this earlier, is that inherent shame.
Yes, I mean,
in our society,
the advertising industry is full of gay people.
Yeah,
yet they're often, I think, I've actually spoken to people who've told me this, that they're actually afraid to bring this up to their clients because they feel they don't want to be pushing themselves or their agenda. They're actually the ones that are not wanting to. So and that's really comes back to the whole kind of sense of this internalized homophobia, this internalized sense of shame, and that, you know, let me not kind of go there, which is sad.
It is, and it's amazing how deeply that goes to really impact, even as I was saying, on economics, on business, and how limiting that would be. Wow.
Have you had some brands and organizations that have been with you all the way that have supported?
Well, We the Brave and Health for Men.
Oh, what a coincidence. Well,
that wasn't a setup, people.
but not really. I mean, we've had a few airlines that have come and gone. We've had a few car brands. But the interesting thing is that even those that do advertise with us, very rarely and almost never do they actually create campaigns that reflect our community. So they'll advertise a car or a airline, but they won't create a campaign that includes, you know, gay or lesbian people or transgender people. It's very rare to see that. And I think that's it. I mean, once we even had an online flowers retailer who advertised on our site, and their ad, the picture, the image of on the ad was of a guy giving a girl a flower, a rose, for Valentine's Day. And that's the ad that they sent us. And I was like, this really doesn't make any sense. But, yeah.
Unless it's a brother and a sister.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, because even that Net Florist ad, you know that one that's been on the radio?
Yeah.
That had quite a lot of controversy.
Yeah, because the voice that they use is essentially, if you put it in a context, it's tending towards somebody who's gay, who's reading the ad.
That's debatable for me. So yeah. He's effeminate and he's a character. And I do know straight people that speak like that.
Absolutely.
But I'm one of the gay people who feels, I don't feel insulted by the ad or upset by the ad at all. I think it's hilarious. I love the character.
They are funny and they do some good writing.
I disagree. I hate that ad. Every time that man's voice comes on the radio.
Switches!
It's just, I really think, and it's not just, I disagree, because they drop hints that he is gay.
Yes.
So it's not just the voice or the
female tone. Say it!
So he says things in the ads that makes it clear that he actually is gay.
Yeah.
And it's just, for me, it's just such a stereotype.
It is.
You know, and sure, stereotypes exist and people of all kinds exist. But when it's always the same stereotype that you keep seeing in the media and ads, then it just sort of, you know, at least let's have diverse stereotypes.
That's the thing, because if you look at it, if you're judging people purely by the way that they talk or an effeminate nature, you are going to put so many men in a category that are not gay. And
absolutely.
And so many men who, if you meet them in any context, you would never on the surface say this is a gay man.
Yeah.
From dress, from mannerisms, from the way people speak. You know, there are gay rugby players. There are gay professional athletes.
Hypermasculinity is very common in the gay community.
That you would never. Think about some of the guys that you played rugby with.
Yeah, completely.
That from an external.
Butch AF. Yeah.
So it's a fascinating thing. Well,
John, I think you can relate to that, to stigma and how people think what you do.
In exactly the same category over the years.
They imagine this guy that basically sits and pervs on whatever, you know, or this gigolo sitting behind the desk. Come sit on me, darling. I'll solve your problem. Whatever the people are thinking. Yeah. But if companies will not, you know, you have been invited to a very interesting place to give speeches.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
So that's a good step in the right direction. Give us some hope, Louis. Tell us about things that work. Tell us about letters you receive or people that do wish to identify with your brand.
I think the most amazing thing and the thing that keeps me excited and going is getting a sense that you're making a difference. That you know, the news that we put out there, I think we do a pretty good job of keeping our community informed and letting them know what's happening, what are the issues, what are the concerns. And it's really amazing to get the feedback and to get a sense that you actually, and especially when people, you know, we often break stories of people who experience discrimination, who experience hate crimes, and to engage with them and to see that we can help make a difference is incredible. And that's the most exciting thing about I think about what we do. And also I love the sense of trying to help build a sense of community within the LGBTI community, because we are so diverse, we're so varied, we from all kinds of different backgrounds and have all kinds of different experiences, especially here in South Africa. And to try and, you know, it can be very difficult because we're so diverse, is to try and build a sense of unity, because we can accomplish a lot like that.
Absolutely. I see the same thing within the conscious sex community. that unfortunately it is such a split community, but the power of togetherness is amazing. And allowing everybody to be who they are in that space. And I don't want to put it in the way that we're fighting with the world, but in a way that's what we're doing.
Yes, yes. And when we fight with each other, you know, we often in our community want others to be the way we want them to be, to have the concerns that we want them to have. And and if we kind of stopped that infighting, I think we'd accomplish a lot more.
Of course we will, absolutely. You know, we were involved with quite a lot of discussions before Pride this year.
Yeah.
And so much of the politics that went on there just detract so much from the essence of what these experiences and events are about.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. You've got to have quite a thick skin to do this.
Yes, you do.
Because you get targeted a lot. You know, I've had a lot of that as well.
Well, I mean, I must say I don't get targeted a lot from you know, homophobes or surprisingly, not directly. But, you know, you've got to have a thick skin within the community and to kind of hear everyone's issues and everyone's concerns. And people are very passionate about the things that affect them and the things that they feel are most important and should be brought to the fore. And so you've got to be able to listen and understand and try and give as much space for everyone to speak and to have a voice.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that the more we can talk, the more we'll find common ground.
Yeah.
Rather than what separates us.
It's very easy to talk. Absolutely. I mean, we don't have a lack of people talking. but the listening part, and really listening, I think, is where the problem lies.
You know, with a lot of couples, no, not with a lot, with every single couple that comes to see me, and this is across the board, and I work with gay people, I work with straight people, I work with bi people, across the board, every single couple, I teach a communication framework. And the biggest part of that is learning to listen.
Yeah.
Not to talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
But learning to listen. To
I think really we all need that. I think, yeah.
That's huge.
I think one of the big things as well that is a challenge that I relate to with regards to the work that Louis does is in this inclusivity that is required in this incredibly diverse community, and a community that is also changing organically by the day, you have to be cognizant of the fact that people use certain expressions and terminologies and labels that people use today will not be appropriate tomorrow.
Yeah.
And think so, for example, about 10 years ago, the term queer was seen as a derogatory or negative connotation or term to use. And so nowadays, queer is quite a friendly term that has been adopted by the community, and people love to use the word queer, and it features everywhere. And then in the trans and intersex community, there are all sorts of terms and references and ways of being represented that have changed very dramatically over a very short period of time. So if you are going to share the views of these communities, you need to make sure that the way that you share the information about these communities and the way that you represent them is the way that they want to be represented, which can be very challenging because it changes very rapidly over a very short period of time.
It's a minefield that you walk through.
So you need to consult with those communities. Mm. So it's not. So I think Louis and I can't just say what we want to say about. We can't speak on behalf of LGBTQIA plus. We have to make sure that we speak to the I, we speak to the T, we speak to the Q. Is this okay with you? You know,
I love that.
Yeah, because
and the acronym. I mean, it's growing.
It just goes on and on and on.
And I was reading something this week about where it's actually going overseas. Yeah. And people were saying it's just getting so out of hand that you've got to kind of go back to LGBTI.
It's eventually going to go down to OM. It's going to be OM.
But in a way, I like it that it's not being diverse yet, or like, okay, let's categorize it because maybe one day it's going to just outrule the straight people. It's just going to be like, hey, look at us. We're a huge bunch. Now there's more of us and these people are just the weirdos. That's the only thing that makes me still happy in that idea of not dividing and still trying to make the evolution of this diverse, different.
There's a very interesting thing about race, and people use race and identities, religious identity, sexual identity in so many different ways to categorize our world. And people use it more as a force of isolation and separation than inclusion. the fundamentalists. Yeah. But if you look at the world and the way the world is going, because of the way intermarriage is happening, the way that different relationships are happening, the way that people are spread out around the world now, that this idea of sort of being pure in any way is so far gone. And the way that we're going, we have this incredible mixture of genes and populations, and it's so exciting because of what it creates.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's an interesting dynamic where we are in a identity kind of culture at the moment where everyone is trying to assert themselves and say, this is me, this is who I am. I want to be treated a particular way. I want to be referred to in a particular way. And there's that assertion of me being different from and being proud and being different. At the same time, we're also in an era of this fluidity where, you know, people don't want labels. So, you know, so whether it's sexually or gender, fluidity is kind of also in. So there's this interesting kind of contradiction between the two, but it's fascinating.
And the sexual aspect of it is huge because there are so many straight men who are having sex with other men,
mm-hmm.
They have no clue what to kind of call themselves in a way.
Mm. Yeah.
Not that they need a label, but some people want that. It's important
that
they have some definition. But they don't want to be gay.
No. Yeah.
And they're not, essentially, or they're not.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, I'm not, but I'm not.
Well, with every passing day, it seems clearer and clearer to me that you are how you choose to define yourself. Mm. And everybody else has to keep abreast of the fact. And that's something that I'm finding really wonderful because, you know, as kids we were told by the people that loved us, you can be anything you want when you grow up, but you can't be that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those cheesy Meatloaf songs. You can be anything you want, but you can't do that. But nowadays you can. If you identify with a certain gender or non-binary or a certain sexual orientation or you want to be a guy who has sex with other guys but don't want to identify as gay, you can do that. Yeah. You can be what you want.
There's a story, I think John Lennon wrote it, where he said he went to school and they asked him what he wants to be and he said happy. And they said, no, you can't be that.
Anything like, but.
You have to be a fireman or a doctor or a what. But he said, I just want to be happy. And they kind of missed the point.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing because if we made choices from the place of being happy, from loving ourselves, the choices we would make in life generally are very different to what we have done.
Mm.
The relationships we would choose would be generally very different. Instead of trying to fit into anybody's idea or expectation of what we should be doing, because what we do and who we are not always the same thing. And how that fits in, I think we'd make very, very different choices if we were allowed that.
Absolutely. I think, that's, I think, an ongoing challenge for people from all spheres of life. Yeah.
What does a professional gay do? Which animal is it? What do you feed yourself? And what are the habits? Or what is the habitat of?
Well, I mean, as I said, it's about being, you know, it's my professional life. So it's you know, writing and researching and reading and watching and attending and interacting on all things around being gay and not just gay, but around LGBTIQA issues. Mm. And sort of being.
What is the A? Because a lot of people get everything up to the A.
It can be asexual and allies.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Also, the Q can be also so queer, questioning. A. Yeah. So. No.
Okay.
Yeah. XBL is doge.
ABC.
There's room for everyone.
There's room for everyone. So you are interacting and. What would you say is the field that you find the most influence that you can actually contribute the most?
Well, I think the one thing, look, Mambo Online was always conceived primarily as being a gay male platform. And that's very much very selfish. It comes from my experience of being a gay male and wanting to kind of, you know, share and communicate and interact with other people who are also gay men. But the site has expanded over the years to be more queer, so and be more encompassing of LGBTIQ issues in terms of news and major stories that break around that. But in terms of our lifestyle angle, it's more focused still on gay men. But one of the areas that I'm very proud of is around hate crimes.
Okay.
And, you know, we report on, I think we're probably the most comprehensive platform in terms of reporting around hate crimes. Mm-hmm. And those are hate crimes that affect, you know, lesbian women, transgender women. Those often are the most, you know, common victims of this kind of violence. And I'm very proud of the fact that we've been at the forefront of that to a large extent. And I think that makes a difference. I think maintaining awareness that this is a reality, that people are being killed and are being violently abused because of their identity and because they don't conform to how our society wants them to be is really important.
Hmm. What are the issues that have changed over the years? Kind of what's come more to the fore?
You know, on a global level, I think the transgender... The transgender identity has become incredibly become a huge thing in the world. I think the transgender community was not as visible 5-10 years ago as it is now. And the transgender community is asserting itself in a way that it never did before. And it's incredible to see that. And there's this real sense of self-assertion by the community, and that's been incredible. And then also there's been that the aspect of the fluidity, that people don't necessarily also want to say I'm gay or I'm straight, or, and especially the younger generation, you're seeing this kind of ability to be sort of non-binary, to be fluid, to be one day I want to, you know, express myself like a woman, the next day I want to express myself like a man or whatever, or a combination thereof. And that's also and it's also a bit challenging for a site like Mambo Online, because, you know, we still focus on the identity of, you know, being a gay man, but what does that really mean these days?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, is what does it mean? And as long as we can create something within ourselves that we are comfortable with and allow for the change. Because life changes us and experiences change us.
Absolutely.
And I've been working with people lately, quite a few people, men and women, who were in traditional hetero marriages and all of a sudden realized that's not who I am.
Yeah, and perhaps perhaps they were that at some point, but you know, there's scope for us to change in our lives.
Up and somebody up, you got people scared now. Change and even identify the fact that you've changed now.
And somebody said something beautiful to me a little while ago. She said when she fell in love with her partner, now a woman, she fell in love with the soul, not with the body. Mm.
Yeah, I can identify with that.
And then the body became kind of secondary.
Yeah,
in a way.
Esther Perel touches it in one of her podcasts, and when she does like an hour chat with a couple, lesbian couple, that one of them decided she wants to go to she's a transgender and she wants to actually change completely. And there was a lot of psychological issues they had to deal with, and they had to grow in the relationship, and it was really amazing to see. In the end of the day, we are humans, we are just souls trapped in a body. Sometimes we identify with it, sometimes we don't. Yeah. And the reality is to stay authentic.
Yeah. So there's an interesting thing about that. And I wrote an answer to some questions that you sent me of an article that's out on the site today, I think.
Yes, yes.
And it was about relationships. And one of the questions was, what are the most important issues? And I have to tell you, across the board, that whether you are straight, whether you're gay, whether you're wherever you are, the single biggest issue coming up in relationships is the idea of intimacy. And that's totally across the board.
Definitely.
That's what people are looking for more than anything else.
Mm. Yeah.
Sex is easy to have one way or another. To find sex is not difficult. To have sex is not difficult. Might not be satisfying, might be quick, but the sex part is easy. The intimacy part is a whole different story. And that's what we're all looking for. And that's about this common heart within all of us, this common soul in everybody, that's really what it is that we're craving and want.
Absolutely,
I think that's a very powerful thing to get across, Jonty, because I think the issue is that sex scratches a short-term itch.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, an intimacy experience creates a sense of satisfaction that has a lasting effect. So even if I have like amazing sex with some random guy this afternoon, it's going to scratch my itch for this afternoon.
Are you implying something here, is he?
He's just making us, we already know the minds. Where is it going to happen?
Is it a nice guy?
Is it a nice guy?
You know
guy?
What? I'm open to suggestions.
Just for the body.
But the point is that it's going to scratch that itch for this afternoon, and it might last maybe 24 hours, but it's actually going to fuel or trigger the desire for me to go and have some more fabulous sex with maybe somebody else. Whereas if I have an intimacy experience with another human being, and it's a profound way of connecting with another soul, it satisfies me in a way that has much more far-reaching satisfaction for me.
Yeah,
and I think that's the difference, is that, you know, instant gratification, it's like the difference between eating a really good, wholesome meal and eating a handful of Smarties. And great, Smarties are awesome and whatever, but they're not really that good for me, and the sugar is just going to make me crave more sugar in the next 2 hours. You know?
Once in a while.
It's an analogy that I use a lot, because food is really important part of my life, is the different kinds of sex. You know, we have junk food sex, we have fast food sex, we have comfort food sex, and then we have gourmet sex. We have like the fine dining sex.
And that's got intimacy.
Yeah, and that's it. And I know in my life, that's where I've gotten to, that's for me what I'm, that's what I want, is the intimacy. That's the greatest level of fulfillment.
Me also.
And that's the depth. That's where everything is, because from that the most amazing sex happens. But the sex without the intimacy has a lack. Yeah, it's nice sometimes, it's awesome, but then it's done and now we want the next one.
Yeah, there's often a bit of a sort of sense of emptiness, I guess. But as you said, I mean, we all like to eat different kinds of foods, and we all at different times. And I mean, if you had to eat, you know, junk food every single day, you'd end up hating it, I'd imagine, or get incredibly bored. So, yeah, that diverse kind of sexual experience and that.
Yeah, and that's the power, is that diversity, and that it's all there without a label. And in the moment of experience, anything can be absolutely amazing when we're willing to have the experience.
It's almost like you would like to ask yourself, not am I gay, or am I lesbian, am I conscious? Mm. Am I conscious to who am I today? So this is much more interesting in a relationship, or even when you do any work with yourself, you know, when you want to do a new diet or when you want to know what you want in life, am I conscious about it?
Well, you know, the fascinating thing is that we look at so much of our lives in that way. And we'll go deeply into the food that we eat, into the clothes that we wear. We look at so many different things about that, but we don't do that sexually generally, and we don't do that in relationship. We look at this very limited perspective of, if I have an orgasm once or twice a week, then I'm sexually satisfied. So I had a really interesting... Yeah, Louis.
I agree with you. I think it's really interesting that it's an area of life that we don't talk about.
No.
To each other, even when you have a partner, your husband or your wife, it's the one area, as you said, you're much more likely to talk, you know, about food, about all kinds of things with each other.
You'll research all the banting stuff that you, and you learn all about it.
But sex is very much about just, you do it. It's not really a talking thing. You don't talk about it so much. You kind of just get on with it.
Yeah. I had an interesting talk with a client the other day, and it was a huge aha moment for her. We were talking about sexual experiences coming out of a pattern and out of expectation rather than a choice. And simply saying, from any experience, what do you really, really want? And how do you actually create that? Instead of just going through this pattern that for most people becomes very orgasm-oriented in whatever way, whether that's through manual stimulation, through oral stimulation, through some kind of penetration, instead of, wait a minute, how do you actually create an experience that's really fulfilling and that you really, really want instead of just the pattern? And we were talking about this. I gave a talk on Tuesday night about exploring your sexuality. Tamar was there.
It was absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. And we spoke about the fact that one of the ways that you start creating a different experience is you need a different entry point into the experience, which means we generally follow a pattern. So we're sitting on the couch and we're watching TV or a movie and we touch and we kiss and we end up having sex in the way that we do. And it follows the same kind of body process that we go through. So have a different starting point. Instead of starting with the kissing, start somewhere else. And then don't go back into the pattern, because you start somewhere else. So you start at step three, and then you go to step four, five, and six. Mm. Start at step three, and then go to step one. Yeah,
shake it up.
Yeah. And these things have now developed a bit of a stigma to them as well. So, for example, and I can only really speak on my own behalf, but as a single gay man, I find it's easier to ask somebody whose name I don't even know that I can find on an app to meet for sex than it is to ask that same person, maybe on another platform, to meet me on a date or meet me for coffee. Mm. And even when I do get to the point where we are engaging with each other physically, I find it's more socially acceptable from my perspective to ask somebody like, let's fuck, would you like to have sex, or do you want a blowjob, than to say, can you hold me, or would you mind holding me, or I need to be held. I mean, even saying it, just saying, imagining myself asking someone to hold me makes me feel this like
anxiety,
big anxiety in my chest, and because, in my solar plexus.
Because if you get rejected by saying that, then that's much deeper than if the guy says, no, I don't want a blowjob. But to be told, you know, that's the thing. That's where the intimacy becomes, that's why it's a challenge, because the level of intensity of that rejection, if you do get rejected, is so much, you know, it's so more much personal. Higher and personal. Mm.
And over the years.
And so we rather just avoid it.
Yeah, and doing what I do over years, when I've had contact with sex workers, we've done some interviews with some sex workers, a lot of people in that field say very often somebody doesn't necessarily want sex, or the sex is such a small part of what they want from a sex worker. It's conversation without judgment.
Mm.
It's intimacy. It's some physical contact rather than just the sex. Because that by itself, in any way, whatever, whether you're paying for it, whether you're not, that's easy to get.
I mean, I have a hypothesis, and I say this rather in my personal capacity than not necessarily in my capacity as a sexual health advisor for We the Brave and Health for Men. But I believe that a world that and a reality that incorporates more intimacy will be a world that will have a lot less sexually transmitted infection, a whole lot less risky sexual behavior, potentially dangerous sexual behavior, and I think it's the lack of intimacy and the lack of value of intimacy, or the lack of knowledge of how to go about getting intimacy, that is creating this reckless sexual behavior where people are just in the moment. You know, there's just, I'm with this person now. I don't want anything between us. I don't want a piece of silicone. I don't want a condom. I don't want anything. I just want, I want to be with that person while I can have them. Because I'm craving a connection. And that's the big issue. And I think that's why so many people are not using condoms. That's why so many people are having dangerous sex with people that they don't know well. And I mean, that's not necessarily what the organization feels, but that's what I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talk about that a lot as the transformational power of conscious sexuality, of the impact that can have on society in so many ways, that if we're connected with that. And the impact that would have on sexual abuse and rape is enormous.
Definitely.
Because that comes from people feeling so disempowered, so angry, rather than it having anything to do with sex.
Yeah.
That's where it comes out.
If you just look at the lens with which you look through, so the lens that you look through when you're like, I want to get my rocks off, that has a very specific lens, and there's certain behaviors that are acceptable and that are not acceptable if you're trying to achieve that, to get your rocks off. But if your motivation isn't necessarily just to get your rocks off, it's to make it, I want connection, I want real connection with another human being, you're going to go about things in a completely different way. It's not going to be just about finding a hole to put your dick in, or, you know, or vice versa. It's more about finding somebody that you'd want to be that close to, that you can experience in a certain way. So,
And the power is in the intimacy and in the connection. Interesting, and I spoke about this the other night as well, is that some studies have been done. Harvard did a study, Harvard in a university in America, the longest running study on happiness in the world, 75 years. And they had these amazing professors, head of this particular department, who kept the study going. And what came out as one of the top factors in happiness is a fulfilled, connected relationship.
Makes sense.
In whatever way you have that, because of the intimacy that it brings, that's the heart stuff.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think if you've got that at the core of your life, it definitely makes it easier to deal with everything else, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and we're busy creating some new content for a YouTube channel and a new talk that I'm putting together on the impact that a happy relationship and fulfilled sex life has on work. So it's something that business doesn't really want to go near because it's about sex. It's not about profit. It's more about profit than you can imagine. Because the interesting thing is the happier you are at home, the happier you are at work. The more relaxed you are, the less stressed you are, the more creative you become, and so on. And so it goes, and it's fascinating. Sense. So we're looking at that. And it's really, really interesting. I'm going to put you on the spot for a second here.
Okay.
As a single gay man
yeah.
who came to a water massage experience.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
So, as I mentioned to you before, I had a lot of trepidation about doing it. I don't really like people that I don't know touching me, and I don't really like to touch people that I don't know, just because it feels like a bit of an energy shock. But what I really enjoyed about the process was that I felt safe. I felt that you held the space incredibly well, and it wasn't there wasn't anything sordid or you know, necessarily sexual about it. There was definitely sensuality, and there were certain elements that could have been seen as seductive. But a combination of the warmth of the water, the low lighting, the incredible mutual respect that was across the board with amongst all the people who participated, and a sense of reverence for what it was that we were there to do and why we were trying to do it made it very, very special for me. And I mean, I'm assuming, I don't know because I didn't ask everybody, but I think out of the 10 of us, I think there was only one other person who identifies as gay.
Yeah,
and that didn't matter. You know, I found myself in a group of people expressing quite a bit of intimacy with one another with various sexual orientations and identities, and I didn't feel othered or different or strange and that was just such a wonderful experience for me. So it was definitely something that I found initially very challenging and scary, but something that I'm very grateful that I've experienced.
And that's really fascinating. And it's one of the things I love about so many of the things that I do. And even tomorrow we're doing an introduction to tantric massage workshop. And it's for everybody. It's regardless of what your sexual orientation is, because it's about sharing that space of sensuality without the label of it being anything sexual and the limitation. And it's something that I think if we could all share on that level could make an enormous difference to connection and the way that we see each other.
Yeah,
I think it could go an enormous – it has enormous possibilities in removing so much prejudice.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to – because for me, I'm one of those people where when you talk about sensuality, I immediately assume it's going to become sexual.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's something that's why I'm also not a very – naturally physical physical person with other people, because I have this fear that, you know, it's going to, you know, it's an irrational thing, but that's kind of how I operate. So it is really interesting to, I'd imagine, go through an experience where you realize that it's not, sensuality and sexuality are not necessarily the same thing. They can be together, they can often together,
they can,
but they're not.
Be, yeah, but they're not.
But they don't have to.
And it's a big thing, because I talk about it so much that generally, you're right. We, as soon as somebody says sensuality, we put that in the sexual arena, and we put it more as foreplay than anything else. Like it's going to lead to somewhere.
Yeah.
But firstly, sensuality is how we experience our world.
Senses.
Our senses, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, the delicious coffee in the morning, all sorts of things. And when we start getting that and we get the connection between sensuality and intimacy, that's where things start to change enormously.
also the value of an opportunity to be vulnerable. Mm. I mean, in life, we're supposed to be successful. We must be hard. We must be thick-skinned. We need to be ready for any event or any situation or any potential conflict. And that's great, and that's good for business, and that's good for being able to deal with everyday life. But there's also a need for safe spaces where you can be vulnerable, where you can let your guard down, where you can trust another person or another group of people. And that was what was so incredibly powerful about the experience for me, was that I was so vulnerable, but I felt so safe. And I would not have been able to be vulnerable if I didn't feel so safe. And I think I just had this incredible sense of relief at having been able to be that vulnerable and to just let myself go and trust that I'm going to be okay. And I was perfectly well kept and held in the space.
Well, you can come back.
Thanks.
In fact, on the 20th of February, you're going to come back. That's our next one. So we're going to give somebody an awesome Valentine present. Come to Warner Massage, and we still have a couple of places for the introduction to Tantric Massage workshop tomorrow.
Louis,
Where would you like to take Mumba? Where do you see it going from where it is?
I really would like to take it, make it more of a Pan-African a site and a platform, because I think that's really lacking in the rest of the continent. So I really would like to see sort of Mumba Uganda, Mumba Nigeria, Mumba Kenya. That's my dream, is to have a sort of platform for LGBT communities, queer communities on the continent.
Beautiful, thank you. Well, I would certainly love to contribute more.
I'd love
in
you
terms
to.
Of content, and I think that would be fantastic.
Are you contributing now?
My first contribution or connection is there this morning on the site.
That's nice.
And perhaps we should mention the site's address.
It's been mentioned all over our social media.
It's www.mumbalikethesnakeonline.com.
It's something completely different. I thought I'm going to see a lot of shops there or a lot of brands, and in the end of the day, it's the most informative, wonderful, interesting site.
I haven't even mentioned why I wanted to come on the show in the first place.
Well, you've got 2 minutes to do it.
Well,
so
basically, it's just because my relationship with Mumba is a personal one. Way back in 2000, I've already started interacting with Mumba. I've been a contributor in many different ways in my personal capacity. And now, professionally, We the Brave and Health for Men works closely with Mumba. But it's just a fantastic platform that allows so many voices to be heard in one place. And it's my go-to when I'm looking for content that I want to share across my different platforms, whether it's Health for Trans or We the Brave, because it is so inclusive, and you're so willing to adapt and change as is needed, and I think that is just so valuable.
Thank you, Bruce.
So thank you guys for being here. This was really interesting discussion, and
it
was so important. Looning. So we did get a message from somebody. Says, I'm so bad with guessing the dirty dictionary words. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if it has something to do with Looney Tunes. Doesn't. Looning, or being a loona, is a fetish for popping balloons.
I don't believe it. No, it's not possible.
And that's why I couldn't resist.
Do you really think so? Like, is it the actual...
No, just the popping.
Popping.
Blowing up.
Just what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
No judging.
Okay, no judging. But if you are, do not knock on our door.
There is a great game that you can play with people with balloons.
There are lots of great games.
Where you try and pop the balloon between
your
bodies, but you're not allowed
to.
Lots of games.
It's hilarious.
Move it around, lots of
oil. You have to use your pelvis.
Yes.
It's fun.
So, this has been really cool. And we would love to be and contribute more personally and as sex talk.
Thank you. And
so
I'd also love to...
is going on, please, we'd love to know about it and offer the platform.
Fantastic.
Because it is so important.
And vice versa. Also very happy to contribute here as well.
Thank you. So we are all happy families. We all love each other. And as I was talking to somebody last night and said, it's a really bad joke and old, but it's still cool. We're all so happy and gay.
We are indeed.
And that's really cool. Please visit www.eroslife.co.za. YouTube channel, Eros Life, is a lots of cool videos. And there's more and more. 30th of May, Mozambique, Tartaruga, wild dolphins. Awesome.
Scheduled.
Absolutely. Tuesday the 20th, water massage. And tomorrow, as I said, still a couple places for the...
introduction to tantric
massage.
And can I just say, if anyone anyone would like to know anything about HIV prevention or treatment, you can call us at Call for Care at 071-683-3226. 071-683-3226.
Good job, Brucey.
Awesome. We wish you all so much pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.